Hey, it's Scott Petrak with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. Deshaun Watson returned Sunday, threw two touchdowns, and stayed healthy, while the defense rebounded with a suffocating performance in a 27-0 win over the Cardinals. The victory improved the Browns to 5-3 and set the stage for an AFC North clash this week in Baltimore. Baltimore, here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. What's going on, Chud?
Scott, so much going on. Make sure you got everyone has to get out and vote today.
I know.
You know, we're taping this on Tuesday.
I had to put that on my list of things to do, Chud.
Got to vote. We got, I don't even know how to handle myself right now. Very little drama with the Browns this week. Deshaun Watson is back. We don't have to ask the question if he's going to play. They actually did what they were supposed to do and destroyed a team they should beat. I mean, this does not happen often. Let's embrace it, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's knock on wood. Seems relatively drama-free moving forward. The big thing was Watson played and got through the game healthy, and they won convincingly. And I don't think there were – I mean, you can nitpick on a couple things, I suppose, from that game, but it's hard to do when it's 27-0. So, yeah, I think now it's all about Baltimore and – not that we won't talk about the Cardinals, we will. But this is a huge one coming up, right? 5-3, the Ravens are 7-2. If the Browns win, all of a sudden they're, you know, half a game back with Baltimore not having its bye yet. They would even up the tiebreaker because, you know, they get revenge for that week 3 match or week 4 matchup in Cleveland. They keep pace with, you know, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. So it's a big one. And really part of a 2-game stretch with the Browns hosting Pittsburgh the following week.
I think the lead story right now, and we'll get to the game, obviously, but the lead story for me is this division right now. Yeah. It's the only one in the NFL, right, where every team's over 500 or at least 2 games over 500. It's just unbelievable how stacked this division is right now. And the scary thing about it is I could make an argument right now that the team that's in last place is playing the best football right now and through the last few years has been the best, and the team to watch out for is the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, you can make that case. I didn't get to see much of that Sunday night game. I was still writing in the press box. But for them to handle Buffalo the way the Bengals did, and, you know, I think they were 1-3, now they're 5-3, right? So it's 4 in a row. And we saw it last year. They started slow. The Browns beat them on on Halloween, and they didn't lose again until the AFC Championship game, right? So we know they're capable of that. Joe Burrow's healthy. He's moving around. He's making crazy plays, as always. They have a bunch of talent. So this division, is going to go down to the wire. Some really good teams. I think two really good teams. I think the Ravens are really good. I think the Bengals are really good. I think it's yet to be determine just how good the Browns are. I think they're trending in the right direction. I think they've got a lot of pieces. We've talked about it a million times, Judd. I think talent-wise, outside of quarterback, they're on a similar level to the Ravens and Bengals. But it's all about how Deshaun Watson plays, how healthy they stay. And then I think Pittsburgh's a little lower. I think they're doing it with some smoke and mirrors, but it's still commendable. But that's why this win's important. If the Browns go into Baltimore, that proves a lot, right? It says, okay, you can beat one of the best teams in the NFL and one of the hottest teams in the NFL because the Ravens are playing at a really high level. And just a quick, when I say talent-wise, I'm kind of looking at the whole team, right? Because as soon as I said that, in my head pops Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and I don't think the Browns match the talent there, but I think overall, when you look at the defense and the offensive line, I think that's where it gets even out.
Boy, that great analysis. I mean, I probably couldn't have said it any better. I mean, you nailed it right there. Everything you just said is exactly how I feel about those four teams. And, you know, you can, without diving into the complete package of talent, let's just look at it at the quarterback. I mean, I would take Joe Burrow 1, Lamar Jackson 2, Deshaun Watson 3, and Pickett 4. I mean, yeah. And that's, you know, you could maybe argue Lamar and Burrow. Watson could eventually get there, but he's not right now. I mean, does that make sense when you just look at the quarterbacks?
It does. And, you know, I mean, the Browns went and traded for Watson because they thought he could be on that level. And I don't know if he needs to play to that level, but he needs to be close, right? I think he needs to be close enough to those guys, especially when they match up. When they play each other, he can't be, you know, overmatched. So that's part of it. And then, yeah, the rankings, I would agree with you. I think through 8/9 games, Lamar Jackson's played better than Joe Burrow. But we know Burrow started the year with the calf injury. You know, if I were drafting a quarterback, I would take Burrow ahead of Jackson. But I think if you're going who's played better this season, it would be Lamar. But that's no slight on Burrow, and it just tells you how good this division is because Lamar is playing at a really high level. I was looking at his stats yesterday. He's leading the league in completion percentage, right? So for all the people that criticize Lamar Jackson, can't make throws out of the pocket, I don't know if that's ever been the case. It's certainly not since, you know, early in his career. I think he's gotten way better at that. But if you're leading the league in completion percentage, that's certainly no longer a valid criticism. But the rest of his numbers aren't crazy. He's got a really good passer rating. I think it's 7th in the league. It's over 100. But, like, the yardage numbers don't compare with Tua and some of the other guys. Yet I read this ESPN column from Bill Barnwell yesterday, and he would vote Lamar Jackson his first half MVP. And I thought about writing that yesterday as, you know, MVP candidate. And then I looked at the numbers. I'm like, oh, you know, the numbers aren't good enough for Lamar to be in that discussion. But maybe he should be anyway, because he's quarterbacking one of the best teams in football. He's completing a ton of passes. He's a dual threat, right? He's run for 400 plus yards. So my point is, for him to even be in that discussion shows you just how well Lamar's playing.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right, we'll get back to the Ravens in a moment here. There's much more to talk about with them, but let's go back to the game. I'm going to let you choose. I think there's two lead stories. It's either you go with Deshaun Watson or you go with the defense. I mean, they're both worthy of the top story. I can make an argument either way. I'll let you choose which way you want to go.
Yeah, I'll do what I did for my game story afterward. I went Deshaun Watson just because of the whole lead up to it, right? I mean, that's all we talked about for 5 or 6 weeks. You know, it was, to me, still uncertain how well he would play and if he would survive the game, because only 2 weeks earlier we saw him against Indianapolis and not be able to make it through the first quarter when he took the hit and landed on his back. So for him to take hits, absorb them, get back up, seemingly no worse for the wear, throw the ball pretty well. And it was scratchy early, right? I know what Twitter was saying. I know what my guys are saying on text. There were some clunkers early, some missed throws, some easy throws that he missed. It felt like, oh, man. And then he threw that 59-yarder to Amari Cooper where he slid a little bit in the pocket left, right, set his feet, made a really good throw. And it was like, okay, we know he can make that throw. And the Browns obviously had some level of confidence in that. Kareem Hunt said he saw him make those throws in practice Wednesday and Thursday. We hadn't seen that from a media perspective. I saw him make some 30-yard throws, but nothing like that. For him to do it in the heat of the moment with, you know, a little bit of pressure, that showed me his arm was where it needed to be. And then he made another – there was a 17-yard out. I can't remember if it was the end of the second quarter or end of the first quarter leading into the second maybe. It was a big-time – 17-yard out, and I said, okay, that's a big throw. A couple plays later, he scrambled for a first down, took a hit, got up, signaled first down, like celebrated, and I was like, okay, that sequence kind of showed me he's back to being able to do everything he needs to do, right? Throw it deep with zip and scramble, because that's part of his game, right? Running is part of his game. So, and then the cherry was the 49-yarder to Cooper in the fourth quarter that set up that final touchdown, right? So all of that to me was, okay, that wasn't perfect performance. You can pick on maybe some decision-making. You can pick on, okay, was he quick enough going through his reads, whatever. But if he can run and if he can throw and if he can take hits, that gives the Browns a chance to be who they need to be. And I to me, that's what Sunday was about.
Yeah. And it's good that he was able to get this game in against the Cardinals, and his first game back isn't against the Ravens. I mean, that's got to do – obviously it does a lot for the fans watching, but it's got to do a lot for Watson and the confidence of Stefanski and the rest of his teammates.
Oh, I completely agree, Chud. I mean, how nerve-wracking would it be, at least from looking in from the outside, how nerve-wracking would it be to see, or, you know, for your first game back after an extended absence, to be against that Ravens defense, right? It's really a good defense. It leads the league in scoring. You know, we know how complicated they are. We know how physical they are. I think there would have been a lot of doubts from Deshaun Watson and the coaching staff and everybody. So I think that was the perfect, you know, get your feet wet, get back into it, get comfortable. If you forget about those 12 snaps against the Colts, I think you can say he built on that really good performance against the Titans on September 24th when he took, you know, when he initially got hurt, when he took that shot to the back of the shoulder, which was his best game and it is his best game since he's been on the Browns, was that Titans game. Well, if you skip that Colts game and you go to the Cardinals game, those are two good games in a row. Throws for over 200 both times, no interceptions, I think a total of 5 touchdowns. So you can kind of see, I think, the arrow pointing up, and now he's going to get the sternest test you can in Baltimore. But I think there has to be a confidence and comfortability bump from what he did against the Cardinals.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, just seeing him throw that deep ball, that was really good. And the one you just talked about, the cherry on top. How about Amari Cooper? And, you know, if everyone hasn't seen or heard about it, you know, he went to Stefanski, right, and said, I'm getting double teamed and I can break this coverage. I can beat that double team. And he did.
Yeah, there's been a few examples, probably not to that same extent, but where Cooper goes to the coaches on the sideline and say, hey, here's what I'm seeing. And I think it was after the Tennessee game where it was a similar discussion. Hey, we can do this. I can beat my guy. This play's open. And Stefanski and coordinator Alex Van Pelt, they're willing to listen. And the players really appreciate that and that they have the trust to, okay, this is going to work. But, yeah, Cooper saw that. It was weird because, you know, there's a million things going on. So I hadn't noticed that specifically. But when you go back and watch it on film, I think he called it counterintuitive, that he was getting doubled by the corner and then safety Buda Baker on these specific plays. And it was usually specific situations. It was usually a third down. The Cardinals were going to bring some kind of pressure, and they would double Cooper. But the angle Baker was taking, he was coming down so hard that it kind of defeated the purpose of taking away that deep shot because he was coming on such a hard angle that Cooper said, hey, I can run through both these guys. And that's not the first time we've seen Amari Cooper run through a double team. I can't remember if it was that Titans game. I think for sure the Monday night game last year against the Bengals, he did the same thing. And, you know, you don't think of Amari Cooper as a burner, but he's got plenty of, right? But he's got plenty of speed and he knows angles and he's obviously a magician of a route runner. So he saw that they got the same look and he ran through both those guys. Now, he wasn't wide open, but he was behind them by a step or whatever it was, and Watson made a perfect throw. So I think that's just a great example of all of it working together. Amari Cooper's his smarts, you know, his intelligence, his speed, his route running, great throw, Kevin Stefanski listening on the situation, all of it, and, you know, winds up being a big play in the game, and the Browns would have won regardless. It sets up the last touchdown. I think it makes everybody feel even better about Watson's arm. And I think to your original point, Chud, Amari Cooper's playing fantastic. And
yeah,
they're not getting a lot of production from other receivers. And, you know, I don't know if we want to talk about today or not that today or not, but you're getting production from the guy you need to get production from. It's pretty much on a weekly basis. And he was 5 for 5, 5 targets, 5 catches, 139 and a touchdown. He has really been good in the 1.5 years he's been here.
Yeah, my concern there, though, is, I mean, it was the Cardinals. I know they were double-teaming him, but, I mean, good defenses are going to key on him, though, here throughout the rest of the way. You know, if we all know he's their only top-notch receiver right now, I think Njoku gives you a little bit of someone else there. But other than that, yeah, there's not been a lot.
No, I think that's a really good point. I agree with Njoku, who kind of feels like he should be their number two option. And maybe he's evolving into that. I think we've seen him be targeted more in the last few weeks. I thought he had a big game against Seattle. He had another red zone touchdown Sunday against the Cardinals. But you're right. And I've thought of that about that too, that that's in the Ravens are the perfect example, right? Let's say the Ravens go, we're going to take away Amari Cooper, whatever that means, right? They roll over the safety, they whatever, they bracket him, whatever it is. How LeBron's going to adjust from a passing game perspective. And it's got to be Njoku. It's got to be Elijah Moore, who we've seen glimpses from, but not, I think, what was expected. Cedric Tillman, right? He played a bunch Sunday after that Donovan Peoples-Jones trade, and he had one target and a catch for 3 yards, right? Like Marquise Goodwin, the Browns are trying to get him involved deep. He's in the concussion protocol. They're going to have to figure out those other options. You're right about that, Chuck.
Yeah, no question. Hey, did you see, have you watched the game broadcast yet?
I have not. It's on my list. That's again on my list of things to do today.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, go vote and then watch the game. Yeah. And then get some golf in. Man, you got a busy day.
Tell me about it. No, but what did you see on the broadcast?
Well, did you see on Twitter the reaction of that one fan after they scored the touchdown?
No.
No. Oh, yeah. You got to go watch. It's hilarious. It's like this Browns fan. He's not happy. Like, he's angry almost after that touchdown. And I don't know. I was just wondering if you saw it, and I was like wondering why. And then I don't know. People were talking about it on Twitter, and some people thought it's because he threw into double coverage or because the ball got tipped or he got lucky or I don't know. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. I didn't research it enough to know. And who knows, maybe he was going against Amari in fantasy. I have no idea.
I was just going to say that, Sean. That was my first thought. Yeah.
I have no idea, but you got to go back and see it. But, real quick though, totally off the subject. How will you plan your day between golf, voting, and watching the game? What order would it go?
Okay, well, only one of those is dependent on the sun being up. So it's going to be golf, vote, finish my writing, and then watch the game. So long as I have the game watched before I get back to Berea on Wednesday, I'll feel okay.
And this is considered your day off.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
The one day off of the week. Yeah, and you're doing this with me, which, you know, we do. This is almost an hour, 45 minutes, and then you. I mean, obviously, the golf, you know, is not work, but then you got to rewatch the game, and you know. Anyway, hey, you live a busy life, my man.
Thank you. I know I do. My wife knows too.
Yeah, man, no doubt. So let's finish up Watson. I'm guessing there'll be no drama this week. We feel pretty comfortable. All speed, all cylinders, full go ahead.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, he made it sound like that after the game. And then Kevin Stefanski reaffirmed it Monday. He, you know, I don't know. I think he said, yep, he's good when asked if he was healthy. So, you know, you have to worry, you know, does it last, you know, the next day, is there any, whatever, residual soreness or swelling? And Stefanski said he was good. So, obviously, you can get hurt at any time, but it feels like we are past the strained rotator cuff portion of the season.
Okay. Before we get to the defense, let's just finish up the offense real quick. Just two quick things. How'd you feel about the running game and especially Kareem Hunt?
Yeah, the numbers weren't crazy. You know, I think they ran it a bunch and got to just over 100 yards. But the ability to commit to that, I think, is critical. Especially when you're probably going to have to play some grinded out games. And I think that's how the Baltimore game's going to be. You know, play field position games, play no turnovers, run the ball, punt. Your punter's kicking great, Corey Bohorquez. So you have to have that ability to control the line of scrimmage, control the clock to a certain extent. And I think this three-headed committee does that. Now, we didn't see a whole lot of Pierre Strong. Maybe they're saving him. Maybe they're trying to spring him on Baltimore a little bit. I thought part of the game planning could be, you know, for those purposes. But we saw Jerome Ford get a bunch of carries, a bunch of playing time. He was the third down back as well. And then Kareem Hunt, you know, to me, he looks better than he did a year ago. He always ran hard, right? That was never an issue. I think there's maybe a little bit more of a burst there. You know, he's not a game breaker. You know, he's never been the fastest running back in the league, but he's really effective in those dirty yards, like the Browns coaches like to call it, when you're around the goal line, if you need to convert the short yardage, I think he's been really effective there. And maybe he's, you know, maybe the Browns use him more in the passing game as they move forward, right? We know he's good in the screen game. He's got good hands. So, you know, he's been a great pickup. I don't know how many choices they had after Nick Chubb got hurt, but I think he's been a really good fit, and he's got 5 touchdowns in whatever, 5-6 games.
Yeah, no doubt. Negative, though, the one thing about this game, it was a bummer to see, although the news yesterday, a little bit positive, but Jed Wills Jr.
Yeah, it's positive in the aspect of it looked like it could be a season ender, right? Anytime you bring the card out, it's not good. They immediately immobilized the leg. You're thinking season ender, you're thinking torn ACL. So the fact that it was only, you know, I put that in quotation marks, only a sprained MCL, and then I think there's a little bit of a PCL sprain, and it's a bone bruise. But the big thing is the sprained MCL. That's good news. It's a relief. He should be back this year. He's going to go on IR, so he'll miss at least 4 games. The early indication is it could be 6 games that he winds up missing, or 6 weeks. So, you know, is that 5 games or 6 games? But you never know. It's still too early. But him not missing, him not having to miss the rest of the season, him coming back, it's, you would think, some point in December. That's good news, because you don't want to be without your 2 starting tackles for the rest of the season. And we know they already lost right tackle Jack Conklin in week 1. So this is a blow. It could have been a worse blow. And now, you know, their depth is really going to be called into question. I think they're probably going to have to adjust game plans and play calls to protect, you know, James Hudson III, because he's not as good as Jedrick Wills Jr. You might have to leave DeJuan Jones, whether or not, and Stefanski wouldn't say if they're going to flip sides, if Jones is going to stay on the right or Jones is going to go to the left, whatever, however they decide that, you're probably going to have to leave DeJuan Jones by himself a lot. And he's shown that he can hold up in pass protection, but that's going to be a lot more pressure on him, because I think you're going to need to help Hudson on the other side. And that's going to be another challenge for the coaching staff.
All right, let's move on to the defense now. I mean, you could have easily led with them, but, you know, obviously I understand why we went to Deshaun Watson first. But let's see, first shutout, Scott, since 2007, right? Mm. Was it 2000?
Yeah, 2007, that Blizzard game against the Bills. Yeah.
Against the Bills, yeah. Forced 3 turnovers, 7 sacks. Did I see this right? 58 net yards. Is that what it ended up being?
That's crazy, isn't it?
Mm. I mean, you know, I expected them to, you know, do well against the Cardinals. Obviously, I expected them to dominate, I guess. But I don't know. This goes beyond domination. Is there one? What would this be called?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been dominant, but you're right. There's got to be another. There's got to be another word for it. I should think about that. You know, we talked. I don't know if we talked about it last week or not, Chad, but it's so hard to predict a blowout in this league. To me, it's impossible to predict a shutout. So I switched. I don't know if you noticed. I meant to send you a message on Twitter, and I didn't. I think I switched my score to 24-10 for my final prediction that went in the paper, because I thought, okay, they're starting at rookie quarterback. Watson's going to play. It feels like the Browns should win comfortably. But 24-10 is different than 27-0, where the Cardinals don't get past the Browns' 40-yard line. I think they ran 7 plays in Browns' territory, right? Like, it was just – they were overmatched. And even though maybe you could say the Browns should have overwhelmed the Cardinals given the circumstances, that doesn't mean it always happens. So I think they deserve every credit for how that played out.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you got to really – it's still an NFL team. You're right. It does not happen that way often. And how often, as you mentioned, do you see where you expect them to dominate and then, you know, it goes the other way? That said, you know, I still am not going to – and tell me if you disagree with me. I'm still not going to call him championship and elite. I need to see him do it a little bit more against the higher top teams. I mean, you know, if you do that against the Ravens, you do that against the Steelers, you do that later in the year against some of these other teams, then I start saying championship and elite. But I feel like I fell for it once, and maybe I'm just being too greedy. I don't know. Maybe I'm asking for too much. I think what it is that people were calling them championship and elite early in the year before I felt like you could really say that. And we've seen Lamar Jackson and the Ravens tear him up. We saw the Colts tear him up.
Right.
I need to see more. I mean, am I being greedy?
I don't think you are, Chud. And I'm trying to strike that balance. In fact, I'm working on an analysis. We'll see how it comes together. But part of it is, you know, I think we know that this defense isn't the 85 Bears defense. But it can also be dominant. It can also put – it should also put the Browns in position to win just about every week. So – I think there's two sides of that coin. I think overall the performance by the defense has been outstanding. They're still, you know, they're still ranked number one in the league in yards. They're third in points. So I think there's a little nitpicky that goes on with, okay, this, you know, they let up this game and they let up these points, but those are facts, right? They gave up 38 to the Colts. Lamar had a good game against them in week four. They let up 28, you know, turnovers by the offense played a part in it, but the Ravens went on two back-breaking touchdown drives in the second quarter when the game wasn't out of hand, and that's squarely on the defense. So I think your points are – I think they're legitimate, and I'm struggling with that myself with, you know, how you describe this defense. Do I call them elite? Do I call them – you know, I don't know if it's even if it's even right to call them the best in the league when the Ravens are letting up fewer points, right? So – I think it's interesting. I do think the Browns defense has plenty of talent. I think they can go in any game and play really well and hold any opponent to, you know, below expectations. We just need to see it more consistently. I guess that's the point is Jim Schwartz talked about feast. Yes. Jim Schwartz talked about feast or famine last week. There needs to be less of that. They need to build on this Cardinals game by going to Baltimore and playing really well and giving this team a chance to win. You know, maybe that's only letting up 10 points, right? Maybe you need to go win a game in Baltimore 13-10. And that's not easy to do. But if you think you're the best defense in the world, then you go do it at the biggest moment against the best opponent, right? So I think you're right. I mean, I'm not by any means crapping on this defense, but I think it needs to continue to prove that it belongs – it belongs at the top of the NFL. And I'm probably going to stop a half step short of declaring them the best in the league right now.
You make a good point, though. They give you a chance to win every week. And that's something we haven't seen in a long, long time. So in that regard, you know, when they do bring their A game and, you know, Garrett's wreaking havoc and, you know, the lockdown. I mean, you're right. At any point in the game, because of the defense, especially with Deshaun Watson back. I mean, obviously, when he was gone, there's concern. All right, well, how are you going to put up points if the defense doesn't score enough points? I should say.
Right, and that's kind of what I'm playing around with this analysis, Chud. And after the game, Watson said, in part of a quote, "There's no ceiling, sky's wide open," and he meant for this team. And like, I kind of agree with him, which to me feels weird because, you know, he's not playing like an elite quarterback yet, if he gets there, right? So you look at a team like Kansas City and go, oh, my gosh, their ceiling is through the roof because probably mixing metaphors there, but because their defense is playing great, Kansas City, and the offense is not, and they have Patrick Mahomes. So when the offense figures it out, oh, my gosh, look out for the Chiefs. Right. And you can say that for, you know, Joe Burrow's healthy. And right. You can say it for a bunch of different teams. The Ravens get healthy, you know, overall. So with the Browns, I think that statement isn't ludicrous because the defense can play at that level. The special teams is playing close to that level. So if your quarterback approaches that, if you don't turn the ball over, all of a sudden, like, that's the recipe to win a bunch of games, right? And to be competitive against the best teams in the league. So, you know, obviously they're not there yet. But I think you can picture a world where Watson plays at a high level and he doesn't turn the ball over and he throws for 250 yards a game and makes big plays a game. And your defense is playing so well that that's all you need, right? And that wins games. So that's what I'm kind of toying around with. But it does feel like, and it's not all going to come down to this Baltimore game, but if they were able to go into Baltimore and put that recipe together and upset the Ravens on the road in a tough place to play, then all of a sudden it feels like, okay, it's all come together. Look out, right? So, like, I feel like it's building toward that. But I think it's premature to say that it's there, especially given the fact that Watson's played one game in the last, you know, month and a half.
Boy, you're putting a lot on this game Sunday.
Yeah, I know. I might be getting ahead of myself.
No, I mean, I guess my thing about this game Sunday is this game means a lot for winning the division and proving yourself. But if they lose, I mean, right, you know, they can still make the playoffs.
Yeah, and if they lose and then they beat Pittsburgh the week after, and then they go to Denver and win, and that would leave 7-4, like, that's perfectly fine. And that's certainly in a wild card spot. And who knows what happens to the Ravens, right? They play Cincinnati on Thursday night. They could lose.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the Ravens have three losses, and you're a game back. Now, you would be behind in the tiebreakers, right? But, you know, you're a game back. There's, whatever, six games left after that. Anything can happen. So, yeah, it would not be any kind of death knell on the season if the Browns lost in Baltimore. I just think it could be an incredible launching pad if they were able to win.
So, in summary, losing Sunday wouldn't be the end of the world, but winning could really take you to the next level. I mean, then you're really – you're feeling really good if you beat the Ravens. You know, that's a great point you bring up about that. I looked ahead to the schedule and saw that. And, you know, I don't think the Ravens would do this. I think they're too smart to do so. But there's always that human element of overlooking this Sunday to that Bengals game on Thursday.
It's certainly worth mentioning, Chud. I think there's a little human nature there. It's a big game. It's the Bengals. They might think that that's for the division title. John Harbaugh got asked about that Monday in his news conference and said, hey, all our focus is on the Browns, which there's no way that's true, because I know that when you play a Thursday night game the next week, the coaches start looking ahead at some point. Right now, the players' focus is supposed to be solely on the Browns. But at some point, the coaches start, like, it's Wednesday night or Thursday morning, like, they start looking at, or I mean, Saturday night, Sunday morning, they start looking ahead to that Thursday night game because there's just not enough time in the week. So, you know, he said all the right things, but I do think that that could be a factor in this game. And, you know, I also think, and we've talked about it on here, Chud, it's hard to play really well in this league week after week after week. And the Ravens played great against Detroit. Then they played kind of average against Arizona in a win. Then they played great against the Seahawks last week. Like, it feels like they're kind of due for a letdown. And maybe not. Maybe they just steamroll the Browns. Maybe they just steamroll everybody, and it's one of those seasons, right? Because teams have those seasons. But I think more likely or more common is the ebbs and flows, where you don't play great every week. That's just how it works in this league. And maybe this is one of those weeks. You know, if you're a Browns fan looking for, like, reasons for optimism, like, I think that's a legitimate one, is that maybe the Ravens are due for a little bit of a letdown.
Yeah. What was your final record at the beginning of the year? Were you 10-7 like me, or did you go 11?
Man, that's a great question, Sean. I'm pretty sure I went 10-7. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Are you sticking with that, or are you – I went and looked at the schedule, and I don't – we don't have time to break it all down. Right. We can do that in a week or two or whatever.
Yeah.
But I kind of went through it, and I'm sticking with my 10-7 with a slight chance of 11-6. But that's where I ride. I'm still sticking with it. What do you think?
I like that call. That was a pregame discussion at the media table in Indianapolis, right? when you're going through wins and, okay, what could they get to? And I don't love that discussion because I think it's so hard, right? I mean, each week's its own entity, not to sound too much like a coach. But that sounds right to me, right? 10 or 7, 11 and 6. Like, that just kind of feels how it's going to shape out. So, I mean, I've not played that schedule game. But that does, and I went 10 and 7. So, but that, it does feel like that. Like, it's going to wind up at, 10 and 7, 11 and 6.
Well, one thing you got to give them credit, I don't know if we've mentioned this, they're 4-1 at home now after that win on Sunday. They're going to have more road games. So, that's something to consider. They definitely are a better team at home.
Yeah, I mean, they're in the middle of a 4 out of 5 road game stretch. Yeah. So they got to win some of those, right? It's Baltimore, and then it's the Denver, LA back-to-back.
Yeah. All right. You ready to get to any more insight on the Ravens before we get to prediction? They beat the Browns, 28-3 back in week 4.
Yeah.
They're favored by 6. The over-under's 38.5.
Yeah, and just the point spread's gone up. I think it was 4.5 or 5 right after the game. It felt 5.5 or 6 felt right to me. So I think that's about where it should be, where I thought it would be. They're just really good, Chud. I mean, I think they're giving up 13-something a game points-wise. It's less than 14. I mean, you can win a lot of games doing that. They've had a bunch of injuries at running back, yet they ran for, I think it was 296 or 298 last week against Seattle. They got a new guy, a rookie, that had a couple big runs. He's fast. OBJ caught a touchdown, which he hadn't done in forever. They just got a lot of pieces. They're getting sacks. Clowney's playing at a high level on that line. Their D tackles got like 7.5 sacks. They're just really good. They're just solid all around, really good Ravens team with Lamar Jackson playing at a high level.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they got it going on both ends. That's so true.
Yeah. All right, before we get to predictions, I got a trivia for you.
Yeah, right? I was going to say.
Yeah, good buddy Zach on Twitter. So we got to answer, right? Last week's question was, who was second on the Browns in sacks last year? We know Myles Garrett was number one. Who was number two, Chud? It was 2.5 sacks.
Number two. Was it Clowney?
It was not Clowney. I take it back. It was 3 sacks, but it was not Clowney. Clowney was had 2 sacks last year.
Okay, so he had 2. Was it a linebacker?
Nope.
So it was a defensive lineman.
Defensive lineman, he was, I'll give you a hint, he was 1 and done.
Was it the one game?
No. He was here for 1 year. Here for 1 year.
Oh, man. So you obviously got this right.
I did get it right, yeah.
My gosh, I'm just brain fart. Can't think of his name. I feel like I'm staring at him, though. What is it?
Taven Bryant. Remember they signed him from Jackson? He was in free agent Jacksonville, signed him for 1 year. Like, totally nondescript. Had 3 sacks. After that, Deion Jones, a linebacker that they picked up when all their linebackers got hurt, he had 2.5. Jacob Phillips, Jordan Elliott, Clowney all had 2 sacks. I mean, what a drop off. You go from 16 from Garrett to 3 for Taven Bryant.
Wow. Yeah, so, no, I was not on that one at all. That even the 1 and done did not help me.
So I'm 1-1.
I started thinking, I'm like, maybe this guy had 3 sacks in 1 game and you just kind of forgot about it.
Well, yeah, heck yeah. Heck, that would work too. So I'm 1-1, and here's the next question Zach gave me this morning. Gerard Warren was the only player in the top 7 selections of the 2001 draft to not make a Pro Bowl. Oh, my gosh. Can you name the 6 that did?
Oh, man.
Plenty of time to think on that, but that takes us back to the 2001 draft. Gerard Warren obviously never lived up to the number 3 pick in that draft, and it gives everybody a time to focus on the Browns' misses, the fact that he was surrounded by guys that made the Pro Bowl.
I mean, so, whose question was this?
It's Zach on Twitter.
Zach, I mean, now, do you think Zach actually knew this, or did he look it up? I mean, that's to remember 6 guys.
He probably looked it up, but he sent me a screenshot, and I did not look at the screenshot of the other 6 guys because I want to think. I know one of them, right? I mean, LaDainian Tomlinson was one of them. We all know that they could have taken Tomlinson instead of Warren, right? Like,
yeah,
that's,
right.
That's in the Browns lore. But I'm going to have to think about who the other five guys were. And my memory's not great. But I'm gonna spend some time over the next week thinking about that.
That's my problem. Yeah. You know what I've realized about my memory? When I was in grade school and high school, and maybe a little bit into college, I could remember all this stuff. I've realized, here's why. As I've gotten older, there's all these more years and players and games to remember.
Well, yeah, it's got to be something, right? It might be all the beer too, Chud.
Well, that could be the case. But, yeah, I mean, I could pretty much tell you almost anything from those Browns teams in the 80s. Like, right? Everyone's numbers and games and things like that, you know. But
yeah, it is remarkable. Like, a little shout out to my buddy Chris Easterling from the Beacon Journal sits next to me every day. He remembers all these games. Like, I'll bring up a random thing and be like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't remember last week, you know? Like, I mean, so, right? But I mean, you're right. I remember old, like, I remember the Bernie years. But you pick a random game from 2007, you know, I got a hard time with that one.
Yeah. No, that's hard, no doubt. Yeah. All right, ready to get to predictions?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, so the Browns are 5-3. You match the Browns at 5-3 with your record. And Scott, you're one behind me. I'm 6-2.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only one game you and I have been different on, and that was the Steelers game, right?
Okay, yeah. I was trying to remember. You're right. It was a Steelers game. And crap, Chuck, they should have won that one. I want credit for that one.
The shoulda, coulda, woulda, right? Yeah, right. I hear you. Yeah, well. No, they should have won that game. You're right. Yeah. But they just, again, that was part of the analysis, Scott. They don't win in Pittsburgh. You forgot that part.
I did forget that part.
But, yeah, I mean, no, we're right there. 5-3 and 6-2. So here we go. I went first last week, so I'm going to let you go first this week.
Chad, I don't know if it's the fact that I'm going to go to the golf course for the first time in too long, but I'm feeling a sense of the Browns can pull it off. I think if you've been paying attention to the signals throughout this podcast, you might have picked up on that.
Maybe.
But I think the defense doesn't. I think the defense builds on what it did against Arizona. Plays really well. I could see a turnover or two. That's one of the issues the Ravens have had this year, is they turn the ball over, some careless turnovers. And I think the Browns probably need one or two while protecting the ball themselves to go in there and beat Baltimore. And we've seen them, you know, that one time they picked Lamar four times and they still lost. But I think that's part of the recipe, is you get a couple of turnovers, maybe you give Deshaun Watson a short field. As long as you're not turning it over and the game's close, you can run and punt and take some deep shots, right? I think that's the recipe against the Ravens. And I'm going to say the Browns get it done. I'm going to go 2019 Browns.
Oh, wow. I mean, you should go to Vegas, or actually just get on FanDuel
and
put a large amount of money on Browns plus 6 if you think they're going to win outright.
Right.
I mean, that would be stealing money, I think.
You're right. If in fact the money line's probably big, right, by itself. If FanDuel's listening, we could always use a sponsor.
Right. That's true. We could use that. Right. Well, I'm not surprised you went that way. I did pick up throughout the whole way here that you would do this. And I kind of had a feeling you would. And I'm just going to tell you, that's the difference of why I'm up one game. Because you did the same thing in Pittsburgh, and you're doing the same thing now. Yeah. And I hate to tell you, but I got this bad feeling that I'm going to be 7-2. And you're going to be 5-4. I got this bad feeling, because I am going to go against you. While I don't disagree with all your points, and if next week the Browns do win and we're talking right now, I'll eat crow and I'll say, hey, man, that was a great pick. And do I think the Browns – this isn't one of those where, remember last week, I didn't see any scenario where the Cardinals could win, right? There's definitely scenarios where I can see the Browns winning this game. But a few reasons why I'm going to go with the Browns. Number one, or go with the Ravens. On the road, I just think the Browns are a better team at home right now than on the road. And I just think that while Watson might be close, I don't know if he's quite to the level needed to win this game. I think they're going to take Amari Cooper out. I would imagine they would. I don't know how successful the Browns running game will be against them. Do I agree the defense can pick up on, you know, last week and do it? Sure. But here's the problem. What do I always tell you? Show it to me. I need right. them to show me that they can go into Baltimore and dominate this Ravens offense. And also, I just feel just by watching, and I didn't really watch a lot of the I didn't really watch any of the Bengals-Bills game because, you know, I had to go to bed and get up early. But I feel like I've watched enough of the Bengals and Ravens recently that I just feel they're a notch above the Browns. And you even said that earlier in the yeah. podcast that they're a notch above. So for all those reasons, I am going to I'm going to go with the Ravens. And, you know, I know I make enemies when I do that. And, well, you know, you pick against them sometimes too. Sure. We both do. Sure. I mean, we both do. I mean, we've almost been locked. We've pretty much been the same all year except for one game. So I'm going to go Ravens 23, Browns 13.
Okay.
Right. And I might reconsider that score. Maybe they could score more than 13, but for now, I'm just going to stick in that range. I feel like it's a trap. I feel like people are going to see those 6 points and take them, and that's one of those Vegas traps. And somehow the Ravens pull it out. And you know, I'm not going to pick 7. I'm just going to bump it up to 10.
I got you. Yeah, certainly that could happen. The Browns get sloppy with the ball. You know, I could see it get away from them a little bit. You know, and maybe Watson's not ready. I mean, that's completely plausible, right? That he needs to play well. He needs at least to play turnover free, I think, for the Browns to have the best chance to win.
I hope you're right. I really do. I mean, I would love to see them go in there and win that game, and we talk about it. Well, let me ask you this. Have you talked to many beat writers yet about the game and what their thought? Like, everyone in your circle, is the feeling that the Browns are going to go in and win this game?
No, you know, we usually get to that late in the week, right? You want to be around the team more and that kind of thing. So that's usually a Thursday, Friday discussion. So, no, this is just me. This is me going out on a limb by myself, Chuck.
Okay. All right. I'm not saying that you wouldn't have.
I know. But, I mean, I don't have any idea if anybody agrees with me or not. So
yeah, because I haven't looked yet. I mean, I think it is. You know, we do make these predictions early in the week. So as we always say, we're allowed to change them if we want before game time.
That's exactly right.
Right. So. Okay. Right. And you know, I'm just having fun with you about being 5-4 and me being 7-2. I know you could easily. I know you could easily win this one. Oh, I don't want to get.
We'll see. We'll see. We're good to go. Cool. Well, hey, Judge, great. I think this was a fun one. I had a good time talking, buddy. As always. And we'll do it again next week when I get back from Baltimore, and we'll have another big one to talk about with the Steelers with the Steelers coming up and visiting Cleveland. So
two big weeks.
Yeah, we're getting into the heart of it here, right? And we're in November, getting to the halfway point, right? The Browns will pass it this week. So, yeah, and, you know, I think we're going to have a playoff race to talk about. That's how I feel. I think the Browns are going to hang around, so we'll see how it goes. But
I don't disagree with that. I don't. And maybe you caught up on my hint earlier in the podcast when I said if they lose this Sunday, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
Let's just relax. Just like when they lost in Seattle. We both predicted them to lose in Seattle, and they did. And we both said they're going to beat Arizona. You're going to be 5-3, and everyone's going to be feeling better. And that's exactly what happened. So, you know, the NFL, I feel like there's a million seasons within a season, and things just change. And as long as you hang around and stay in it, you don't completely, you know, blow it for like they usually do when they start out 0-2 or 1-3. As long as you stay, like, they're right where they need to be right now, man. They're 5-3 in the toughest division in football. I think everyone should be positive right now.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's just a matter of what they do with it, right? They've got your quarterback back. You're in position. Let's see what they do. So, perfect. Thanks so much, Chud. I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownszone.com. Thanks.